Samuna Chira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Sri Sri Mata's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON B.B.D. Founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paravajikacharya, Sovdadasata, Sri Sri Mata's Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Goswami Maharaja Ki Jai, Ananta Gaudiya Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nachananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Govinda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopadan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Nabadeep Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 22, The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, and we're going to be doing texts 26 and 27. Amantriyatam Munivaram. Amantriyatam Munivaram. Anugyatta Sahanugaha. Anugyatta sahanugaha Pratashte ratam aruya Pratashte ratam aruya Sabarya swapuram nirpa Sabarya swapuram nirpa Ubayor Vishikuyaya Saras Ubayor Vishikuyaya Sarasvatya Sudo Dustasaha Sarasvatya Sudo Dasho Rishinam Upashantanam Rishinam Upashantanam Pashyan ashrama sampada. Pashyan ashrama sampada. Amantriya tam munivaram. Anugyatta sahanugaha. Pratashte ratam aruya. Sabarya swapuram nirpa. Ubayor Vishikulyaya Sarasvatya Sudo Dasa Daso Rishinam Upashantanam Pasyanashrama Sampada Okay. Vaishnavis. Mantriya, taking permission to go. Tam, from him, Kardama. Munivaram, from the best of sages. Anugyataha, being permitted to leave. Saha Anuga, along with his retinue. Pratashte, started for. Ratam Aruya, mounting his chariot. Sabarya, along with his wife. Swapuram, his own capital. Nirpa, the emperor. Ubayo, on both. Rishikulyaya, agreeable to the sages. Saraswatya, of the river Saraswati. Surodaso, the charming banks. Rishinam, of the great sages. Upasantanam, tranquil. Pasyan, seeing. Ashramapsampada, the prosperity of the beautiful hermitages. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave, the monarch mounted his chariot with his wife and started for his capital, followed by his retinue. Along the way, he saw the prosperity of the tranquil seer's beautiful hermitages on both the charming banks of the Saraswati, the river so agreeable to saintly persons. Purport. As cities are constructed in the modern age with great engineering and architectural craftsmanship, so in days gone by there were neighborhoods called Rishikulas where great saintly persons resided. In India, there are still many magnificent places for spiritual understanding. There are many rishis and saintly persons living in nice cottages on the banks of the Ganges and Yamuna, for purposes of spiritual cultivation. While passing through the Rishikulas, the king and his party were very much satisfied with the beauty of the cottages and hermitages. It is stated here, Pasyan Ashrama Sampada, the great sages had no skyscrapers, but the hermitages were so beautiful that the king was very much pleased at the sight. Om Gana Tamaram Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurim Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stap Bhitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dirati Swaparanti Kam. So here we have Swayambhuva Manu, and he's just getting ready to depart after bringing his daughter to offer his daughter in marriage to Kardama Muni, and it's describing how he's impressed. You know, he's impressed by the Rishikula, which is, as Prabhupada mentions here, is where the great saintly persons resided. And it's significant because, you know, he's the emperor of the entire universe. He's got opulence coming out of his ears, so to speak, right? He's, you know, super opulent personality. He's got a retinue. He's elsewhere in the Bhagavatam is described, you know, how he's in his palace. And in the morning, people come, all sorts of, you know, Brahmins are chanting mantras to help him wake up and everything. You know, he's got a lot of opulence, but he's impressed. He's impressed by the Rishikula, the, you know, the village of the saintly persons, by the atmosphere You know, it's more than just the cottages. It's the whole thing. The cottages are on the bank of the whatever it is, the Saraswati River here, and but the whole overall atmosphere is, he's impressed by that, and he's reflecting, wow, this is really nice. And this is coming from somebody who's, you know, what do you give to the guy who's got everything? You've heard that expression. So here's a man who's got everything, all the opulences, gross and subtle that you could possibly imagine, what to speak of desire, you could possibly even imagine. He's got them, Swayambhuva Manu, and he's impressed by this. Okay? So, in the same way, you know, there's this kind of analogy here. If the President of the United States came here to offer his granddaughter to one of our brahmacharis, when he left, he should be that impressed. He should be so impressed that, wow, what a nice place that New Dwarka is. What a nice atmosphere. Of course, he should leave with his granddaughter also, right? Because I don't think any of our brahmacharis are interested in getting married at the present moment, right? So he'd be leaving with his granddaughter. Well, not even to the president's granddaughter, no? No, okay, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, he'd be leaving with his granddaughter, and but he should be impressed. He should be really impressed at, wow, what a nice, just like Swayambhuva Manu was impressed by the Rishi Kulas, you know, the hermitages of the saintly people. Somebody who comes to an ISKCON temple should be really impressed by the spiritual atmosphere. So how do we create that spiritual atmosphere? How is that done? Well, Prabhupada gives, Sukadeva Goswami gives us a guideline here in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada elaborates upon it in his purport, so I'd like to share that with everybody. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 2, text 37. This is Sukadeva Goswami speaking. He says, even while engaged in various activities, devotees whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet and who constantly hear, chant, and contemplate and cause others to remember your transcendental names and forms are always on the transcendental platform, and thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's how that atmosphere is created. Devotees have to be completely absorbed in the lotus feet of Krishna by the process of constantly hearing, chanting, and contemplating, and also trying to share it with other people. That creates a transcendental atmosphere. And as it says here, by doing that, they're always on the transcendental platform. And he concludes by saying that will help us understand the personality of Godhead. So that's how that atmosphere is created, by devotees being absorbed in hearing and chanting. Their mind's always absorbed at the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, that's sort of like a general process, a general description. Now, in his purport, Prabhupada kind of leans into it a bit and gets a bit more specific here about how to, he shares with us his vision of how that instruction of Sukadeva Goswami should be applied in his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Okay? And here it comes. Prabhupada says, you've heard it before, but there's a lot of repetition in Krishna consciousness. It's a good thing. It's worth repeating. So Prabhupada says in the purport, the last paragraph of the purport to that verse, he says, the word kriyashu, meaning by manual labor or by work, is important in this verse. One should engage in practical service to the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all our activities are concentrated upon distributing Krishna literature. This is very important. One may approach any person and induce him to read Krishna literature so that in the future he may also become a devotee. Such activities are recommended in this verse. Kriyashu yach twach chadanaravindayo. Such activities will always remind the devotee of the Lord's lotus feet. By fully concentrating on distributing books for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna. This is samadhi. So, not to be fanatic, you know, it's there. Prabhupada does say that, so, you know, it's not bad that I'm, you know, repeat that, but not to be fanatic. The principle is here, by being fully absorbed and concentrating on, Prabhupada specifically mentioned distributing books, I think we could safely paraphrase that to be devotional service in general. By fully concentrating on devotional service for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna. This is samadhi. So that creates, that's samadhi, or that transcendental consciousness is created by being fully absorbed in the devotional service. Prabhupada specifically mentioned distributing books here. So that's the idea, that we have to strive for that. We have to strive for being fully absorbed in devotional service to Krishna by one of the nine methods, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, etc., like that. And that's what the Krishna Conscious Movement is. It's an opportunity for that. It's an opportunity to help us to elevate ourselves to the transcendental platform. And in so doing, when we do that cooperatively, we create a transcendental atmosphere, which makes it very like conducive for other people. When they come in, they become inspired. They should. That's what should ideally be happening, that people come. And we experience that. You know, we get people coming in, you know, offering compliments about how they feel taking prasadam at the restaurant when they come to the temple. But that's what, you know, that's the idea, that we should be so serious devotees ourselves that we create this like this transcendental atmosphere so that people, when people come here, they become inspired. See? And this is it's a great opportunity. Actually, this we should contemplate. We should try to reflect, remind ourselves what a great opportunity we have here. It's just like the human form of life is like fertile ground. You know, just like if ground is just like recently in the last month or two, we've had a lot of rain. So I don't know if everybody's had an opportunity, but if you just drive in any direction except for west, you're going to the ocean. But if you just drive for like an hour in any direction, any other direction, you'll notice that all the hills, they're not like all gray and brown and, you know, ugly, like unfit for human habitation. They're all beautiful now. It's all green. It's lush. It's green. It's kind of like, you feel like, wow. It gives you the illusion of a paradise. Illusion of a paradise. It's not material. We're still in the material world. But it's there. So why did that happen? The water comes from the sky because that ground is fertile. You see, if the ground is fertile, then something can grow. And the beautiful green grass grew. You see? And so at least for a couple months, it's going to look beautiful like that. So, because the ground is fertile. So the analogy is, in the same way, the human form of life is the body of the 8,400,000. It's the 400,000 that are fertile. It's fertile consciousness. We have, when you get a human body, it has fertile consciousness. So in the same way, just like when you have fertile ground and you have pour some water on it, something grows. Some grass, some this, some that, whatever, and it looks beautiful, right? So in the same way, human form of life is fertile consciousness, and if you water, or you introduce some hearing and chanting, some bona fide, correct hearing and devotional service, and broaden it out, devotional service to Krishna, then spiritual consciousness should emerge. See, so this is the opportunity, you know? We've got to constantly be reminding ourselves of that. This is the body that, you know, if I just introduce some bona fide devotional service, some spiritual consciousness should, you know, emerge from that. So there's a certain quality to that. That's definitely the process, but it only works if we do it seriously. See, it's unlike the fertile ground that it could be done very haphazardly. It could rain for 5 minutes or 5 hours or 1 day or 10 weeks. Something will grow. You know, it's kind of like it's a pretty easy process. But igniting or, evoking spiritual consciousness is a little bit more tricky. It's a little bit, it has to be done more carefully than just splashing some water on the hills, you see. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita here, I think it's text 36, Prabhupada makes an interesting statement. Yeah, this is, the translation is, but for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. Yoga practice without mental control is a waste of time. See? So we have to practice. And there's a big difference between just controlling your mind enough so that you don't grossly violate the regulative principles, or you manage to get your 16 rounds done, and being in samadhi. It's not exactly the same. We have to work at improving how much we're controlling our mind, because in the sixth chapter here, it's described by Krishna, says in the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. And it says, this perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self, capital S, by the pure mind, and to relish and rejoice in the self, capital S. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. So he says, when you come to that stage, that you actually not only experience boundless transcendental happiness, but that you actually understand, you start understanding, get realization about Krishna consciousness. As the verse goes, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Gurayam Indriye Sevan Mukhe Hijivado Swayameva Spadatya, that Krishna can't be understood by the blunt material senses, meaning that while the senses are still functioning on the material platform, you can't really understand the transcendental subject matter. You're not going to get realization about it. But when we engage in devotional service, beginning with process of hearing and chanting, then Krishna is pleased by that, and he reveals. But as it says here, one's mind has to be completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. So that means, it's practice. It takes practice. But, we should avoid wasting time on the internet, looking at this video, that video, reading this thing, that thing. That's actually not required. It doesn't help. It's not like breaking a regulative principle, unless you're looking at pornography, which is breaking a regulative principle. But short of that, but it's not going to help. It's not going to help us become more absorbed in Krishna consciousness. See? So, once again, practice. And I think that's what Krishna says in that verse. I would like practice, constant detachment. So we have to do like that. And if we do that, hopefully we'll make progress towards, elevating ourselves to the transcendental platform and create a wonderful atmosphere. This should be like a Rishikula. As I started off by saying in the beginning of class, that when people come here, they should feel that, whoa, there's something different about that place, This is way, so I don't know what it is. It looks like it's a building, like all other buildings, and there's, people, but there's the atmosphere. They should feel, they should be able to experience the spiritual atmosphere, and that'll happen if we're practicing seriously ourselves. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions? Question first. I think that's how we usually do it. Take the questions and then comments. Anybody have any questions? Okay, so comment. Amal Bhakti Maharaj.
It jumped out.
Oh. Archie took a book.
Thank you for a very nice presentation, Prabhu. Sometimes it takes time for the general public to appreciate who we are and what we're doing. It's not always like it's our fault because somebody doesn't appreciate immediately. Sometimes it happens immediately. I've told that story several times about that devotee in San Diego who joined. His parents were divorced, so first the father came with him and he was a little leery, but the son was really into it, so he said, all right, go for it. And then later on after he joined, he brought his mother. And the first day she came, she walked through San Diego temple front doors, she saw Radha Giridhar. She said, oh my God, they're so beautiful. Immediate appreciation. But a lot of people are not like that. There's a story of Satsuru Maharaj's servant from many, many decades ago. First time he met the devotees in London, he kicked them. He was so enraged, so in the modes. No provocation. He was just so upset about these people chanting on the street. Just went up and kicked one of the devotees. But lo and behold, later on, he became a devotee. By hearing, chanting, getting the books, getting prasadam. So Prabhupada said that. Make them fortunate by giving them, because it's a process of uncovering what's already there. Krishna consciousness is not something that you can purchase, or it's there in the heart. It has to be uncovered. And that uncovering process is based mainly for most people through taking prasadam. Mm-hmm. By honoring prasadam, the tongue starts to become purified, and then the consciousness becomes elevated enough where they can start to appreciate, yes, these people are actually nice and different.
So, Asbu.
Thank you for a nice presentation.
In reading the purport, I thought there was something very interesting there where Prabhupada mentions about that Swayambhuva was attracted to the cottages because of the beauty. And of course, you know, Srila Prabhupada spoke on many occasions about the importance of cleanliness. And Prabhupada said, cleanliness is next to godliness. So, from my point of view, I think it would be a very good idea for all of us in this community to keep that in mind. Wherever we go, if we see papers on the ground, pick it up, throw it in the garbage. Sometimes I see there's things laying around, people just walk right by it, don't even care. Like it's, you know, who cares? We should care. I mean, we should be very clean, not just here in the temple room or on the outside, but even in the prasadam room. Be very clean. Don't leave anything behind for someone else to clean or expect someone else to do it. So I think that that's a very attractive feature. So when people do come, when they see everything being very clean, especially in the grounds, they become very attracted to this place. Many people have told me on many occasions how clean it is, and they're very attracted to it. So I thought that was a very important point in terms of how we should present Krishna consciousness to those that know what we're doing. They have no idea. Sometimes something can be so attractive that you go in there just to see what's going on here. What are they doing? So that principle of cleanliness, and what to speak of on the altar, in the pujari room, in the deity kitchen, the big kitchen, all these places should be spotless. If you go to a 5-star restaurant, if you go into the kitchen, it's spotless. There's nothing on the floor. Everything's clean and properly put in the proper place. And so we should take that as a point of how and what we want to teach people about Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact quote. I know it was in relation to the temples, but Prabhupada used the phrase summit cleanliness. Do you remember the rest of the quote? Summit cleanliness. Deity worship. Summit cleanliness. So, yeah. Okay, anybody else, anything? You got your comment? Go ahead.
Jump back. Just want to say that the chanting, as you mentioned a few times, is not chanting on nothing. It's not chanting on zero. It's not chanting on impersonal nothing. The chanting has a form. We should be thinking of Krishna. Chanting without thinking of Krishna is meaningless chanting. But when we have Krishna in mind, his face, his form, his activities, the things that he likes, anything to do with Krishna in the chanting is good and continues to enhance it, intensify it, and magnify it, because one becomes attached to that Krishna, because he is a person and not merely a sound, not merely a name. It is a person, and as long as we know that that is the person to whom we are attaching ourselves to, then our chanting becomes bigger and better and greater and higher, and Krishna brings us closer and closer and closer to himself.
Hi, Krishna. I'm going to be a devil's advocate. You mentioned book distribution, and just this question came to my head. We distribute so many books daily in the United States. How come not so many people are coming to the movement?
Well, it takes time for seed to germinate. That's the best answer I give. I mean, the seeds, we're planting seeds. And we are meeting people that read them. I mean, because we're going back out and meeting some of these same people who got the books, and some of them are saying they're reading. And so I guess it's just going to take some time. That's the best. I mean, I think about that every day.
About the preaching programs? Because it looks like cultivating people gives higher rate of bringing people to the Krishna consciousness.
Prabhupada, right here in this room, he said, print as many books in as many languages as possible and distribute, and this Krishna conscious movement will automatically spread. He said it. So we have to have faith that that's true, and continue distributing the books. Not that we shouldn't cultivate. We should, you know, I think Prabhupada didn't maybe talk about that a lot, because he just said it was like a no-brainer. You know, it's just like Prabhupada expected his, you know, Western disciples to be able to get married and live peacefully. And then he realized, oh, they can't even do that. I think, you know, that, this is my speculation. But Papa, I think, just figured, well, yeah, cultivating people, sure, that goes without saying. But, yeah, I think we have to continue distributing the books, but also pay attention to people when they show an interest. That's super important. That otherwise, you know, people could come and go. So it's cultivation is definitely super important, but simultaneously we have to keep distributing the books. Looks like such a one.
Thank you very much, Virupati Prabhu. The question that she asked has been asked many times. Sometimes where I go, what happened? How come they don't join? But ultimately, also, what you said is correct. But I've been observing also that in colleges, and you might probably have seen this too, other groups, we can learn from other groups. For example, the Mormons, they go there, they're not, you know, like, passing out books like anything. They concentrate mostly in person to person, and I've seen them, I've been watching them. They're very well dressed, really nice, and take their phone number and spend time with the person, and they actually, they're doing really good. And I've seen other groups, so we are working on that. I've seen that, for example, in New Zealand, Devamrita Maharaj open up these different centers, and my wife was there too, and she was telling me the success, and they're joining. We also do have now some devotees going to St. Luis Obispo, right? It's happening, so yes, we should have more, because, you know, we follow the instruction of distributing books, but we can, along with that, give a lot of emphasis to the other aspect, because it's kind of like disappointing to me. Also, I think you can distribute so many books, but they can be just like, okay, they just, you know, this is not for me. They were just, they took it out of politeness or something, but it doesn't necessarily close the deal. So if we could have more people focusing in the other area, that will accomplish our mission. I'm just putting that in my...
Yeah, that's a good comment. Sure. We got time. I stopped early.
That's a nice point that Chapter Chinoy made. The important point about closing the deal, that has to do with, do we love God? Do we love Krishna? Are we enamored of Krishna? Do we think about the pastimes of Krishna? When Krishna becomes our all in all, what happens is that we become flooded with the love of Krishna. When people feel that love coming from us in our speech, there is a natural attraction to that, because everybody actually, internally, wants the Supreme Lord. But they don't know that. It's completely disguised. But they want that something greatness. They want that tremendousness. They want that all that Krishna has. So when a devotee is filled with love, it manifests through his speech. And when it manifests through his speech, it causes the person who's being spoken to have some kind of attachment or some kind of interest or some kind of eagerness to want to know more about this. And the more of this love that a person is exhibiting or exuding, then what happens, the more the person will become attached to what is being said. And the result of that ultimately should be that they not only hear about the philosophy, but read about the philosophy, become absorbed in the philosophy, and then begin preach it as you yourself are doing now.
Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Terminals every day, airports, in central, where did those books go? They went all over. you know, when we're married, people have families. There's a lot of, you know, nerve.